Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of our program, Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful to have you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming midway 1548 Satellite Islam and on the DSTV book 826. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful week. We've had lots of rain in a couple of days, and we're definitely going into a different season. Leaves are beginning to fall. Dawn is breaking a little bit earlier each day. And we definitely need a garden or two when we're going out. And signs of that autumn is definitely here. And when we know of autumn, we know soon we'll be having to wrap ourselves up. And well, before that happens, we have some time to prepare for that. Now, autumn heralds the start of the colder weather and the crunch time. You know, if you're walking out in the garden and tramping and going out to a park, that wonderful feeling of getting that leaves crunched under your feet, and that's a fantastic feeling that I always have when I, and brings me back to my childhood days. This morning we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Michelle Kudza, and she's going to share with us. She's been with us a number of times, always sharing such beautiful insights, and we're going to talk about a number of things. One of the things that we definitely want to talk about is natural pest control and what is happening, because we've had extremities of weather, very hot weather, and rains, and it's just been the breeding ground for insects, but what happens next? And online with us this morning is Michelle. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Ismail.
And how are you keeping this morning?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Very well, thank you. And lots of rain on our side. Has that been the same thing on your side?
Yes, it's been absolutely marvelous. The last two evenings, we've really had wonderful rain. So we're very grateful because it's been dry.
And when we talk about wonderful rains, you know, we're going in, and I was reading an interesting article yesterday saying that weather patterns have definitely changed. 2014, 15, and 16 has been said to be the hottest in South African, you know, in South Africa's, you know, history in terms of temperatures just rising all the time. And we're not too sure what happens for 2017. They also say on record it being the hottest January and December. So something that, you know, we need to take cognizance of. And whilst we have all of this rain, Michelle, I'm sure you understand that we mustn't forget some of the lessons that we've learned in the past year. Is that correct?
For sure. I think, you know, just because the dams are full and just because we're getting rain, people mustn't start wasting water again. I think we always need to be mindful that South Africa is a dry country, and we need to make sure that we garden according to that, and also in our houses that we practice water-wise principles all the time, because one cannot waste precious water.
Yes, and whilst we say, you know, South Africa being in a water-scarce country, and we sometimes forget some of these habits, I was just a thought coming through my, you know, rushing through my mind, is that this is something that must be ingrained in young children, and it must be part of, you know, whilst, you know, we give the responsibility over to the schools, but I think families should be doing more, not just leave that responsibility. So at home also we have this, and somewhere in the other, you know, just make it a habit and saying, fine, this is it, this is how long our showers have to be, this is how we've got to do, and like you said, use some of the grey water effectively. And that would be our small contribution in helping this water, you know, scarce country of ours.
No, most definitely. And if everybody did their part, it would certainly make a difference.
No, definitely. Now, you know, talking about the weather and so forth, we're going in, and again, the article yesterday said we're not too sure whether La Nina or El Nino is going to hit us. So whichever one it does, we'll have to wait and see, because it does bring its own, you know, consequences with it. If you have the one, it has so much rain and being, you know, devastating floods. If it's the other one, we could have the drought again. And they're saying that the drought is not over. Whilst in our part of the world, we have lots of rain. We know that the Eastern Cape, Western Cape is still going through some very challenging times.
No, for sure. But I believe they have had some rain.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, but again, some is, I suppose, well, they're going into the rainy season, so that would perhaps make a difference.
That's right, yes.
Now, Michelle, you know, when we talk about this, you know, sort of topsy-turvy weather, it brings along some other conditions in our own gardens, and one of those is that it attracts a natural, it attracts pests. Now, when you look at hohos coming in, and there's been an infestation of aphids in many people's gardens, and think, what are we supposed to do? Have there been enough ladybirds to help us along to get rid of some of the aphids? What else should be done? Have you found something similar to that?
No, most definitely. With the warm weather, the first sign of pest is aphids, especially on the nice young shoots. And now with the rain, one needs to keep your eye open, because the minute there's soft new young shoots, the aphids are there to attack them. And a lot of the winter veggie crops, like the cabbage family, so in other words, cabbage, cauliflower, and broccoli, they're very prevalent to aphid attacks. So one needs to keep your eye open for that. And I've also had lots of customers coming in with citrus problems, with mealybug and aphids and scale on their citrus because of the heat that we've experienced.
Now, while you say, you know, that we have all of these challenges, and does it mean we always have to resort to chemicals, or are there other alternatives?
No, there are definitely alternatives. Look, eventually, if you stop spraying in your garden, you will find a balance. And as you mentioned, the ladybirds will then start eating the aphids and so on. But there are other alternatives. I have mentioned this recipe on the radio before. We've used it with quite great success. It's a teaspoon of methylated spirit, a teaspoon of grated sunlight bar, the green bar, and 1 cup of lukewarm water. And if you mix that all together, you can actually use that as an insect repellent spray for, you know, when the insects are there. And then in most of the herb books, there are insect repellent sprays where they basically take a bucket of herbs and then add boiling water and leave it overnight and then strain it and use that. So in any good herb book, you should find a recipe for an insect repellent spray as well.
Just repeat the one, because 1 teaspoon of methylated spirits, 1 teaspoon of sunlight or the green soap.
The grated sunlight, and then a cup of lukewarm water, just to melt the soap.
And you then wait and dissolve it, and when it gets cool, do you then put it on, is that correct?
That's correct, yes, you spray it on. And then apart from that, one can also plant some herbs as what they call trap crops. So, for example, next to your cabbages and your broccoli that you'll be planting now at the beginning of the autumn season, you would plant something that actually attracts the aphids. So the idea with the trap crop is that the aphids are attracted to that crop and not to your actual veggies. Unfortunately, the people in the frost tender areas are a bit of a problem, because nasturtium is the best trap crop, and that frosts in our area, but in the warmer areas they could definitely plant nasturtiums, and marigolds also help in the veggie garden as well.
And marigolds also susceptible to frost, or does it withstand the cold weather?
Unfortunately, yes. For winter, one can put a few calendulas in, which look very much like marigolds, and they also have a certain effect. And then there's lots of insect repellent herbs which one can plant, which are hardy. Things like rue, pennyroyal, rosemary, southernwood. Your tansy is an excellent insect repellent for fruit fly under your fruit trees, but it dies down in winter and then comes up again in spring. But your fruit fly is more prevalent in summer, and it's a good time to plant something like that now. In actual fact, it's a good time to plant any perennial, because their roots will establish and they'll die down for the winter, and then in spring they'll come up again.
What about wild garlic? Would that be good?
Yes, wild garlic can certainly be used as well. And for those that want indigenous gardens, wild garlic is indigenous, the Tolbachia, so that would also be a very good choice.
Okay, so when we talk about all of, you know, so these are some of the natural ways to control the pests. And you've spoken about, you know, infestation in other plants as well. And the psylla seems to be always, you know, a big culprit when it comes to the citrus and some of the other plants.
That's right, yes. Unfortunately, I don't know the natural remedy for psylla.
Yeah, you know, everyone's come up and some said put garlic, you know, put the, you know, wild garlic, the Tolbachia, others are coming. And everyone seems to have got different remedies. Some work, some don't. But you have to be very patient about that.
Yes, most definitely. One has to realize that going the organic route, it's not sort of a once-off spray and it kills everything. You need to repeat the organic sprays, normally between 10 and 14-day intervals, because obviously they don't actually have physical poison in them, so it does take a much longer time to have an effect.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is it's environmentally friendly, whereas you can take some of the systemic wood to help, but then you'd kill other things as well, not just, you know, the infestation.
Exactly, and often one's killing the ladybirds, and more importantly, many of the poisons are killing the bees, and without bees we won't have food. And I think this is the big thing that a lot of people don't realize, that without bees there won't be food.
And, you know, when you talk about just bees and the butterflies, there were some interesting, you know, studies being done, and internationally there's this concern about, you know, bee populations dwindling and also butterflies. And these are very good indicators of the state of your garden, the health state, you know, if you have to take a, you know, health check of your garden, look for bees, look for wasps, look for butterflies. If they are there, then you've got it right. If not, that means something's wrong.
Yes, most definitely. You're quite right.
Now, when we look and, you know, when you talk about, it's also time for the birds which are migrating, and some of them are going to be staying on. And when you use some of these harsh chemicals, you also deprive them. And sometimes you wonder, when you do see a bird, you know, lying on the side and suddenly it has died, you wonder what has happened. It may have ingested some of the poison, is that right?
That's quite possible, yes.
Okay, so when you look at some of these things, you know, just what is happening in the environment. Now, is there any other things that we could perhaps do to, you know, prevent, you know, or to control the pests, you know, the bugs? And,
I beg your pardon.
No, that's fine, you carry on.
With your indoor plants and those that have possibly started moving their chilies and peppers and tomatoes onto the patio to protect them for the upcoming cold, one needs to make sure that there's enough air movement, because if the position where the plants are standing, whether it's now veggies, the last of the summer veggies, or things like impatiens or begonias, or any of your patio plants, you need to make sure that there's enough air movement. Otherwise, you will find mealybug and aphids occurring, because normally if it's too hot, or if there's not enough air movement, that you find that there are problems, particularly on the patio.
And, you know, is it too late perhaps to still plant some of these from seedling, you know, capsicums and chilies and that, with that root, or do you think it's a bit too late?
And from seedlings it is late, but a lot of the garden centres, being the end of summer now, have big plants available in big pots, which you could then actually take and put onto the patio, but make sure that they do get some air movement to ensure that you won't get diseases. But if you get them in big pots and you protect them, you certainly have them for another few months into the summer, into the winter.
So you've got to make sure that you take them. And when you're talking, you know, about transferring from one position to the other, what are some of the watch points? Because sometimes people say when they transfer, they're not very successful. Is it you were taking it in the same direction it has been? Just take us through some of those steps.
A lot of people say that. I've never experienced a problem. When you say transferring, Ismail, I just want to clarify that you want to say taking it out the garden and moving it to a different position in the garden.
Maybe from indoors to outdoors, you know, something like that, because, you know, we're now going to bring in, the next thing I want to talk is bringing the outdoors in, you know. We've got to bring the outdoors in. We're going to take some of these things. Take us to some of those steps.
Fine. So we're basically just moving the plant from one position to another. It is in a pot and we're placing it in a different position. What one needs to be mindful here is that just like what we go out into the full sun, we burn, we get sunburned, the same with the plants. You can't take plants from a shady patio area and now go and put them out in the full sun. They will burn. If it is a plant that can handle sun, what you would do is put it in a position that gets a little bit of sun and then move it to a position where it gets more and so on and so forth, until it eventually acclimatizes and gets used to the sun. And the same thing goes for the plants that have been in the sun that you're now putting indoors or on the patio for the winter. You need to make sure that you don't take them from a sunny spot and go and put them in a very dark spot. You need to choose a spot where they will get sufficient light, particularly things like the veggies that need the light for their fruit.
And what about, you know, when people bring in, and of course as we're going in, we're going to have, you know, unnatural sort of heat coming through, so perhaps putting in heaters and, you know, air cons and so forth to keep the house warm, and then you've taken some of these plants, would that be disastrous?
It can be, especially if you put it very close to your heaters, because of course the air will be drier, first of all, and then your soil will also dry out. So you'll need to keep your eye on the watering, that you may need to water a little bit more because the soil will be drying out more.
And one of the plants I know that people would be looking out for and bringing perhaps indoors has been the orchids. Tell us something about the orchids.
The orchids, yes, there's various varieties available, but the most popular is the moth orchid, the Phalaenopsis, which is the one with the broad leaves that look very much like a clivia or amaryllis leaf. And they can't handle cold at all, so they definitely do need to come in. And they need to be put in a position where they get enough light, but not necessarily direct sun.
And you know, when you bring it in, I'm sorry. So when you bring in all of these, the most important thing would be light and to check on the humidity, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
So
because,
light,
as you mentioned, the heaters will definitely dry out the air, so perhaps one will need more watering. What one can do with many of the orchids and many of the indoor plants, particularly things like the anthurium that like a lot of humidity, you can put what they call a pebble tray. In other words, you take a saucer, as in a plant saucer, and you fill it with pebbles and water. And then you would place your orchids or your anthuriums on top of the pebbles so that there's humidity around them, but they're not physically standing in water.
So to have a layer of stone and then, you know, put in some water and then you put the plant on top of that. So
you plant with its pot on top of the pebbles, that's correct, yes.
And in that way, would that, you know, plant sort of have the humidity around it?
Yes, it definitely makes a difference because then there is some moisture around them.
Okay, that's a fantastic watch point. Okay. Now, when you're looking at, you know, some of the other things that we're taking in, you know, people want to sometimes brighten up their homes and so forth, and don't always have the opportunity, but have some of these plants in the gardens now and want to take them in, what would we do?
You could take things like your impatiens and begonias and try and dig them out very nicely and put them in pots and put them on a protected spot for the patio. But it also depends on in which region you live. If you live in a very frost, tender region, I wouldn't bother because it's just so cold in some of the areas that it's not worth the effort. But if, for example, in Johannesburg, you could definitely chance it and put them on your patio, provided your patio isn't on the southern side, which is normally the colder side of the house. You know, so that also depends on which side of the house your patio is. On the eastern side or the western side or the northern side, your plants will be much happier in the winter than on the southern side because the cold comes from the south.
And, you know, what about being too close to a window? Because, you know, the window sort of, you know, whilst you have direct sunlight, you know, it magnifies. But when it's cold, I find that, you know, the intensity increases.
Oh, no, most definitely. What you could do, I know somebody who lives in sort of Donata, which is between Nigel and Springs. And what he does is he actually hangs an extra curtain of frost cover. He uses frost cover as an extra curtain at his windows, and that makes his sort of sunroom a lot warmer, and that's where he keeps his plants for the winter.
So that would definitely work.
Oh yes, to keep it much warmer, yes, it definitely makes a difference.
And you know, looking at trends again, you know, it's now no longer a garden that's outside or, you know, indoor plants that are just inside. We have an extension of both. You know, people are bringing the indoors out and outdoors in, and so forth. And that trend has become a very big trend. Have you seen some of that happening?
Oh, yes, most definitely. And with that, you find a lot more container gardening happening because many people don't either have the time or the space to have an actual physical garden. So we're finding we're selling a lot more pots and people are mixing things, mixed plantings in containers.
Okay, so then once you have all of that, what are the, you know, sort of other precautions that we should be taking if we're wanting to have a successful and wanting to look out of your window or say, you know, at least you see the brightness when it sometimes becomes very dreary and dark and grey out there, that you have some brightness in it?
Oh, well, for the winter, there's really nothing better than pansies. If I can recommend one colour plant for the winter, that would be pansies, because even in the worst frost, in the morning, they might look like cooked spinach, the way they sort of all curled up because of the cold. By about 10 o'clock, they're up smiling with their faces. And truly, especially I love the yellow pansies because they really like so bright in winter. So if you've got limited space and limited resources, you have to go for pansies for the winter.
Okay. And whilst we're talking about pansies, is there any other one besides the pansy?
Yes, there's lots of winter colour. A lot of people think that you can't plant seedlings for the winter, but for the shady spots, the primulas and the primroses are probably the best choice. And then for the summer, the pansies, and of course the smaller ones, which they refer to as violas, they're also very nice. And incidentally, the violas are edible, so you could use them as garnish on your food. You could use them in salads as well. And then for hot sunny spots, the calendulas, or the poppies, and even petunias. Many people think petunias are a summer annual, but what petunias can be used right throughout the year. What happens in the very cold areas is they stop flowering, and the plant seems to just establish and become stronger, and the minute the warm weather arrives, they just continue blooming.
So the petunia is a good bet.
Oh, yes, most definitely. And then the small perennial petunias, they go under various names, Calibrachoa, mini bells, but you'll see them in the garden centers in pots with small little flowers, and they actually cascade over, so they're good for hanging baskets or for flower boxes or for window boxes against the wall, or then tall pots which they can cascade over, and they bloom right throughout the winter.
Thank you very much. We're going to go for a short air break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We need to look at bulbs and looking at veggies and oriental veggies as well. So we'll talk about all of that after we come back. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you just tuned in, my name is Ismail Riava and welcome back to this edition of Dare to be Different. And we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Michelle Kudzu, talking to her about to us about a number of things, especially what to be done at this particular time of the year. Whether you are listening to us via the audio streaming, Midway 1548 Satellite Islam, and on the bouquet, on the DSTV bouquet 826. And I know some of you still curled up in bed, and others perhaps around the breakfast table, but please remember you could join our conversation. The number to dial this morning, 854-1548, 854-1548. If you have any queries, any questions you'd like to share or ask Michelle, please now. Michelle, we're talking about a number of things that could be done, and one of the things that that happens at this time of the year is bulbs. Tell us about bulbs, and is this the right time? I talk about winter bulbs, spring bulbs. Tell us something about those bulbs. Hello? I don't think we've got a back, Mohammed. We seem to have lost Michelle. Mohammed, we'll just try and get her back in. So we were talking about what is to be done at this particular time of the year, and lots of things that we can still do. You know, it's been a trend in the last couple of years where people are now gardening into winter. It's not like in the past where once, you know, summer was over, we thought that was the end and we'd wait for the next summer season. Gardening has now become so interesting, and there's so many, you know, we're spoiled for choices, and we have so many other plants that we can bring into our gardens and enhance our environment. And there's no need for us to say, well, fine, we've had enough and we're only going to garden in the next season. I think there's so much that we can do in the winter as well. And, whilst we doing all of that, there's a lot of other things that we can do. You know, look at the gardens and see what has gone wrong for the season and so forth. And we can then rectify some of that. We've got Michelle back. Hi, Michelle. Thank you very much for being with us.
Yes, Israel.
I was just saying to our listeners, you know, normally, you know, in the past it has been such that when autumn came in, people said, we've had enough gardening. We'll wait until the next season. But now that, you know, we find we're spoiled for choices, there's so much to do, and we can continue gardening throughout the year. And we find the trend has definitely sort of picked up, and everybody's now going and saying, well, fine, we can do so much, and it's not like it was in the past. Is that right?
Correct, yes. People often had the idea that you could only plant in spring, and autumn is actually the best planting time because I've mentioned it before on the radio that your roots establish. And you don't often get much top growth with many of the plants like the shrubs and the trees, but at least your roots establish, and when spring comes, you've almost gained a season by planting at this time of year.
So it's still a fantastic time. And you just mentioned to us, and you said the petunias were also a good choice as well. Now many people say, well, you know, petunias shouldn't be planted in winter because it dies down, but you've indicated that it's a good time because then the roots will be established come the next season, and you'd have a very strong and healthy plant.
Yes, as I say, they may stop flowering in the frost, but the plant will remain.
Definitely. Now, you know, when we come to this particular time of the year, it's associated with the bulbs. Tell us something about the bulbs and what we could put into our gardens.
There's many bulbs available at the moment already, but what I would need to caution the listeners is that don't plant too early because the soil hasn't cooled down enough for bulbs. So one needs to wait, I would say, at least another 2 weeks before putting your bulbs in. Things like the indigenous bulbs, the Sporaxis, Ixia, Tritonia, Tinkering Cheese, and Freesias are already available, as well as the what I would like to call the Dutch bulbs, that one traditionally, when you think of Holland, you think of hyacinths and Dutch irises and the grape hyacinths. They're all available at the moment, but as I say, buy them because often the gardeners don't get a second delivery. So when you see them, buy them and keep them and plant them in about 2 weeks' time. And then in probably 2 or 3 weeks' time, the daffodils and the snowflakes will be available. Because of the heat, the bulb people have kept the daffodils back because if they put them on the shelf, the people tend to plant them too early and then they don't have success with them.
And we carry on. Please do carry on.
So, and soil preparation is very important with the bulbs. You need to make sure that you prepare your soil properly, mixing in enough compost and digging it over well. And then also the watering of bulbs is important because one needs to remember that when you apply your water, you need to give sufficient that it reaches the roots which are at the bottom of the bulb. So you need to water deeply.
Now, you know, in the past, I think, 2 seasons, we were not very successful. There wasn't enough daffodils coming in. Is there enough this season?
Well, at this stage, we haven't been told that we're not getting our order, so I'm very hopeful that we'll be getting it in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, so because I know that definitely for the last 2 seasons, I think there wasn't any daffodils, but I've seen some already where people have forced, their growth, and I've seen some daffodils already in bloom, but that must have been done under certain conditions. What about tulips? Would that be available?
Tulips are a problem and have been for the last number of years, but basically for the reason that it's becoming too hot for them. So I really think those that want tulips must buy them when they see them in bloom in pots and enjoy them for a few weeks, and that's it. Because honestly, our soil is too hot, even in winter for them. Our soil is too hot in South Africa for them, so they don't do well. And often, you know, you can have them for one season, but they won't come back the next year. This is the problem with tulips in South Africa. Whereas something like daffodils, they just come up every year, and you can leave them in the ground for up to 5 years in the same position before needing to lift and divide them, and they also do well in pots.
And what about poppies? Do we have success with poppies?
Yes, poppies are seedlings which you plant now this time of the year, and then they normally bloom late winter, beginning of spring. And they definitely like the cooler weather.
And, you know, when talking about daffodils, sorry, going back to daffodils, about the colors, besides yellow, do they get them in a number of other colors?
There's yellow, there's white, and then there's a lot of bicolor ones, some of which they refer to as scrambled eggs, because literally that's what they look like. It's yellow and orange and mixtures, and you have some doubles, and then you have some singles. For example, a yellow with a red or an orange center in the middle, at least orange, definitely not red, and then others where you have yellow and white combination.
So, you know, when you do come in, and your advice is as soon as you see them, take them whilst you don't have to plant them immediately, because stocks may not be sufficient for everybody.
Yes, because we don't often get a second delivery. When one phones and you want to reorder, they say, oh, no, sorry, they're sold out. So that's why I always say to people, when you see the bulbs, buy them, but don't be in a hurry to plant them because of the soil. The soil needs to cool down.
So would we say around about mid-May, would that be too late to plant?
That is starting to get late. I would say towards the end of April, beginning of May.
Okay, end April, beginning of May for some of these. Are there any other, sorry, carry on?
No, that's the best time for them.
Are there any other, you know, watch points with the, you know, bulbs? Because normally people do, and one of the things I know that some of us do, and I've done that in the past, is sometimes we dig them in too deeply into the ground, and we don't plant them, we bury them.
Yes, you'll see on the back of the packets, they give you instructions exactly how deep you need to make them, and most of the bulbs have a point to the top. Except I forgot to mention the ranunculus and anemones. The ranunculus look like a spider, for want of a better word, and their claws need to face down, whereas all the other bulbs, the point needs to face to the top.
Okay, so those are some of the watch points. Now let's move on to something that, you know, that people always have an interest in, and that has been, you know, food security. And whilst it's a lovely time to get some of the vegetables in, tell us about some of the vegetables that you think could be and should be planted this time.
So this time of the year, it's definitely your cabbage family, which includes your cabbages, your cauliflowers, your broccoli, your Brussels sprouts, as well as your beetroot, the carrots, onions, and even garlic. It's the best time to plant garlic is now March, April. And spinach, of course, spinach can be planted right throughout the year. And then, as you mentioned earlier, Ismail, the oriental veggies, and they've got terrible names, pak choi, pak soy, mizuna, and all sorts of, but they prefer the cooler weather, and they're lovely for stir fries, and some of them even can be cooked as actual veggies and then used on sandwiches.
Yes, and, you know, looking at some of the oriental veggies, I see they're very high, you know, in their content, in the vitamin contents, vitamin B, you know, the number of vitamins that are available, you know, once you plant them and if you eat them, it is definitely beneficial for the body.
No, most definitely. And they're becoming very fashionable, the orientals.
And are they easily available?
Yes, they are. They're normally with your veggie seedling, so you'll find them in the garden centers in the veggie seedling area, and perhaps sometimes in the herb area. Some of them are available in pots in the herb area.
And do they do well in pots, you know, or do they have to be planted into the ground?
They can be planted in pots or in the garden. The Japanese mustard is probably the biggest one of them all, which has huge leaves, sort of almost the size of a half a spinach leaf, and they get tall. They probably reach about a meter or so, whereas your tatsoi and pak choi are much shorter, and your mizuna reaches about 300 millimeters, and that's got the slightly mustard peppery flavor.
And would you know, would all the garden centers have them now, or is it just a bit too early for them?
No, they're already available.
Okay. And whilst you're talking about, you know, winter veggies, what about winter herbs? Are there any specific herbs for winter?
Basically, it's your more your Mediterranean hardy herbs. things like your rosemary, your thyme, and I need to be very careful now because I need to think of the spots. Basil is a no-no in frosty areas. So those that have a protected spot or that live in warmer areas could definitely do basil. But basically it would be your rosemary and your thyme and your parsley and your bay. So more your Mediterranean herbs, they definitely go right throughout the winter. And, of course, things like celery and then, as I mentioned, the parsley.
Just, you know, something about parsley. It's a very difficult plant to grow. Tell us something about it.
It is. Some people don't have success with it. Some of them, they overwater it, others underwater it again. It is a bit of a temperamental plant, and quite honestly, you're going to laugh at what I say now, but let's say it's the husband that plants the parsley and he's not having success. Let the wife try, and perhaps she can have success. Because honestly, it is a bit of a temperamental plant.
Yeah, and I just find that, you know, it's a very easy plant to grow, and also that... it doesn't, you know, it just dies down after a couple of weeks. You may have something, a couple of sprigs, and the next thing you know, it's lo and behold, it's all gone.
Then, as I say, let the other spouse try and grow them.
Let's look at some of the citrus. There's some queries coming about citrus. Tell us something about citrus. They're saying the thyme, I beg you, the chine is a big, the, what does it say here? It talks about the thigh, you know, what you call it, limes. Are the leaves edible?
Thai limes, yes. The Thai limes, they have a different shaped leaf to your normal citrus. It's almost like it's two leaves in one. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like it's got two leaves in one. And then they have a small fruit, which is quite knobbly and a lime color. And there you use the actual leaves. In a lot of your Thai recipes, they'll call for Thai lime leaves. And that's the one you use for that. But one thing I'd like to mention about the citrus is that drainage is particularly important because they need well-drained soil. So if you're planting any of your citrus in the garden and your soil tends to be a little bit on the clayey side, you need to add coarse river sand and you need to make sure that you sort of plant it slightly higher than the surrounding soil so that the water can't collect there. And in pots, you can also mix a bit of coarse river sand into your potting soil and just make sure that you put a few stones or your old polystyrene seedling trays, you can break them up and put them in the bottom of the pot just to ensure that they drain well. That's really important with citrus.
Another query coming through with regards to calamondin. I've had a calamondin tree, but I've no success. I don't seem to have any flowers coming on, and I've had no fruit. How do I get it to fruit?
Okay, not too much water. The citrus don't like a lot of water, and you can feed citrus once a month with something like 315, which will encourage flowering and fruit. And they also enjoy Epsom salts once a month. You can give them a teaspoon of Epsom salts once a month and then sprinkle it around and then just water it in.
Okay, so it's 315 and some Epsom salts.
Yes, and not too much water. The citrus do not like to be overwatered.
Okay, I'm just making a note of that. Thank you very much for that one. Another question.
They do very well in pots, and calamondin and the kumquat are completely frost hardy, whereas some of the other citrus can get damaged by the frost.
Okay, something about stone fruit. Is this a good time to prune or should we wait?
No, one prunes a bit later. Any fruit trees get pruned sort of at the end of July. It's definitely too early to do it now, because if you prune them now, they'll just have new shoots, and when the cold comes, they'll get damaged.
Okay, I'm just looking at some of the queries coming through. So you have the calamondin and you have that one. What about, you know, just say something, the dunya, you know, the dunya leaf, the coriander. It says, I don't have very much success when I plant the seeds. What do you think I've done wrong?
The big thing with seeds is that you need to make sure seeds never dry out. Because if seeds have dried out once, you can then just forget about it. So it's very important that when you plant seeds, particularly if you're first doing them in trays, to make sure that you put your trays in more of a shady spot so that they don't dry out so quickly. And if you're planting out in the garden, just make sure that you keep the soil moist all the time. That's really important. And one needs to remember that coriander is a very short crop, so it only lasts about 3 or 4 months. And then it goes to flower and seed, and then you need to replace it again. It's not a perennial plant.
Okay, she's still with the same question. She says, if I cut off the tops, would I be able to harvest it for a longer period of time instead of just pulling it out by the root?
It might make a bit of a difference, especially if you start harvesting them just before they flower. The thing is, once they've started flowering, it's almost too late. So one needs to make sure, with all your herbs, even your basil as well, the minute you see the flowers appear, cut them off, and that will definitely prolong the harvesting season.
Okay. Just another query coming through with regards to to watering of the orchids. Tell us something about that.
If we're talking about the Phalaenopsis orchids, as I mentioned before, that's the one with the broadleaf, they say that the equivalent of 4 ice blocks once a week is enough. Because what one needs to remember with them is that they're actually epiphytes, in other words, air plants, and where they occur naturally, they occur in the trees, they don't have soil around them, and they get the moisture from the air. So that's why they plant them in bark, because they don't need physical soil, they just need something to sturdy them, as it were. So 4 ice blocks once a week is sufficient for the Phalaenopsis. Your cymbidiums, which are the ones with the longer grass-like leaves, those will possibly need a bit more watering, I would say, twice a week or once a week, a good soaking.
Question coming through with regards to seeds. Is it too late to do some of the winter plants now if I start with seeds, or is it far too late?
One can definitely still do it, especially because it has only started cooling down now. So it's definitely still time for seed, but just remember that, as I say, watering is very important with seed. And you need to make sure, if you're planting seed in seed trays or in pots, that you need to use the right mix. There's a germination mix available, which is rather expensive, but very good for germinating seed. And then also in many of the garden centers, you'll find what looks like a brick that goes under various names, cocoa peat, palm peat, coir brick. It literally looks like a brick, which you put in water and then it touched up, and you can use that even to sow your seed in because it holds the moisture.
Query coming with regards to lawn. What should I be doing about my lawns? I've got quite a large patch of lawn.
It depends on what type of lawn. If it's something like the standard Kikuyu lawn, you can still give it a last feeding now with something like 315, because 315 not only produces flower and fruit, it also strengthens the cells against the cold. So the last feeding would now be a 315, and make sure that you cut it. And the minute it really starts going cold, then you would stop cutting it, and obviously you'd be reducing your watering as well. And if you've got something like a LM lawn, particularly the listeners in the Durban area, they have the Berea or LM lawn, which there would stay green, so you could continue watering it and feeding it. But in the frosty areas, you would also start slowing down with the watering, and then definitely almost stop with the feeding now with the 315 as the last feeding.
And once you say 315, would they be scattered? And what about the watering? How would you do that?
Yes, with any fertilizer, once you've applied it, you need to water. And generally, one could say a decent handful per square meter, and then you water it afterwards.
Thank you very much for some of those queries that have come through. Let me just see. And we're going back to some of the flowering plants. You've spoken about the petunias, and you spoke about the pansies. And is there any other one that we could bring in indoors?
Indoors, yes, definitely. Your calendushes or calendivas. Calendivas are the double ones. And then one of my favorites is the cyclamen. And those are the ones with the slightly heart-shaped leaves, and then the stalks with almost upside-down flowers, if I can put it that way. And they're available now, and it's a bulb. It's a winter bulb, so it flowers from now till about October. And the listeners that have space under a shady tree can then, once they start dying down in October, actually go and put the pots under a shady tree, and next year they'll come up again. It's definitely a winter bulb, so it flowers right throughout the winter months. And they're really one of my favorites. My grandmother used to always have them in her sunny lounge windowsills, and they really did well. And then there's things like chrysanthemums, which are available right throughout the year, and they last about 6 weeks indoors. And when they finish flowering, you can always plant them out in the garden, and they'll come up every year. And then begonias, and of course the orchids.
Okay, and just a query about peas. Is it too late to sow pea seeds, or should we get seedlings?
Peas are also for the winter. You can still sow. They're not always available as seedlings. I think the thing is they're so easy from seed. So that's probably why many of the growers don't do so many peas. They more do the difficult varieties. So definitely from seed you can do them now. And carrots, of course, are for the winter as well. And seed is so easy with carrots.
And would you just sprinkle them into the ground, or what would you do that? Just query
me? Yes, you can sprinkle them. With something like carrots where the seed is very fine, what you can do is you can actually take millimeal and mix it with the seed, because then you can actually see what you're doing and you can see where you're spreading the seed so that you don't spread it too thickly.
Another query with regards to broad beans. Is it the right season, or is it a summer crop?
No, normal beans are a summer crop, and then broad beans are a winter crop. So it's definitely the right time for them now.
Seedlings or seeds, which is a better preference?
Seeds. I've never seen broad bean seedlings available. They may be available, but we've never had them. We've always just done it from seed.
Okay, and finally, we just almost come to the end of the program about the berries. What berries are available, and it would be a good time to start with berries?
Yes, you can, because again, they might not get much top growth, but your roots will establish. Things like raspberries and cranberries and blueberries are available at this time of year, and they can be planted throughout the year. And then more towards summer, towards September, you can then do your Cape gooseberry, because that's an annual which frosts down. So the raspberries and the cranberries and blueberries are definitely a good choice for planting now.
And would they do good in pots, or would they have to be done into the ground?
Your blueberries and cranberries do very well in pots, because the blueberry is more of a shrub and the cranberry is more of a low shrub rambler, if I can call it that, where your raspberries, they need some support because they're quite tall canes which can reach up to 2 meters high. So they will need either a trellis or a couple of poles with some wire across to support them.
So last question coming through, Grenadillas. What do I do? It seems to have overgrown the spot. What must I do? Could I cut it down? Should I just wait? Because I still have some fruit on it, it says.
The grenadillas are frost tender, so if they've still got fruit on, wait, and then you can harvest the fruit. And if you can, try and form some form of a structure over which you can put some frost cover to protect them for the winter. And the listeners that have grenadillas in pots, you could then possibly move it to a protected spot, but they definitely need to be protected against the frost. The northern side of the house is obviously the best choice for them, because it's more sheltered, and as I say, they would definitely need some frost cover over them.
Well, thank you very much. That brings us to the end of another interesting program. Thank you for being with us again, Michelle. It's much appreciated, and we'll chat to you soon. You take care.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Ismail.
Thank you very much. And that is Michelle Kudze from Brand Miller's Nursery out in the Vereeniging area just outside Roshni. And have you got anything on special, Michelle? Hello. I think we've lost her already. And if you're wanting to go, it's Brand Miller's Nursery just a couple of meters out of Roshni, and always interesting and wonderful insights that she shares with us. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.